Hour number two coming at you. We have been on the air for 60 minutes, and we haven't even talked about Karl Anthony Towns. Friday night, Timberwolves deal him to the New York Knicks for forward Julius Randle, Dante DiVincenzo, reserve Kata Bates-Diop. By the way, and I knew the name immediately, he used to be a Timberwolf for the 2017-2018 season he was here, and then a first-round pick that the Knicks owned from Detroit. Once again, to me, Tim Connelly is showing that he's a genius, man. I mean, we've talked about this for a long time, Pete, and you and I talked about it at the end of last season. And I said on these very airwaves that I thought New York was a perfect landing spot for him. Mm-hmm. And you know, everybody should take note of how he does this. So Tim Connelly makes this great deal, and it is a good deal. No matter how you felt about Karl Anthony Towns and how you thought his production was or wasn't here in Minnesota, his second on the team in scoring last year, 21 points a game. But without him, the Timberwolves were 14-6 without him. And ultimately, it wasn't that Karl Anthony Towns ceased to be effective. It was about the fact that they had other players who could fill his role. They could save themselves some money, and in the end, they still. I still think that they, in terms of talent wise, are the same for next year. But they save themselves roughly $10 million to go build around Anthony Edwards, who is your franchise player. You extend Naz Reid the last year. Clearly, he is more than just a reserve. We all knew that, and we're probably going to see him get a little more playing time this year. So it'll be interesting to see how that goes. I think Julius Randle is a very, very good player. Probably, you know, certainly is just effective as Karl Anthony Towns, or at least close. He was injured last year, so he only played 46 games, but 24 points a game last season. The year before that, 25 points a game. 20 points a game the year before that. So the guy can play. He can't shoot like Karl Anthony Towns. Listen, there is no one his size, other than maybe Doncic in the NBA, that can shoot like he can. So that's going to be a difference. But overall, I'm more and more impressed about what Tim Connelly has done here in Minnesota, Pete.
Yeah, Connelly stepped up. And I think that's the difference. And that's why probably we're as critical right now as we've been with the Twins, because we're not seeing the same type of confidence in some of the moves that they're willing to make. And I think that, you know, when you look at this trade, it caught a lot of people off guard. I know there's been some chat about this potentially happening, but probably not at the pace in which it did. So people are looking at this one, and I'll tell you, I think both kind of win coming away from this. So that, yeah. which can be a good thing. I think Cat maybe did need to go somewhere else where he could be a little bit different player than he's been with us for a while. He's struggled with some injuries himself, but that's my one concern about this trade too, is the injuries, and where does that really put us? Is Julius Randle? We're talking about some pretty major stuff going on with injuries that he's had. So hopefully all of that starts to heal and he's doing much better with that right shoulder surgery. But 46 games last year, like you said, he has gotten a little bit better, it seems like, every single year. I mean, he's nearly a 2010 guy. So when you look at what he brings to the table, and then you add that in there and get Dante as well and a draft pick, a first-round pick, I really think that Tim Connelly did a great job and put us into a position where we can extend a pretty young basketball team. We can extend them into the future. And I think it really fits us well what he was able to do with this trade.
Well, Trader Tim, and that's what I'm going to call him, Trader Tim, what I love mostly about what he does is he really, to me, it seems like he takes the feeling out of it, right? And that's why this is great to have someone come in with this outsider perspective. Had he drafted Karl Anthony Towns, there's no doubt in my mind that this maybe wouldn't have happened, right? Because these guys, you know, they get hung up on guys that are theirs. But I mean, when you look at this roster now coming into next year, Anthony Edwards, Rudy Gobert, Naz Reid, Julius Randle, Mike Connelly, Jaden McDaniels, Nickeil Alexander-Walker, Luka Garza is probably going to come up. I mean, this is a legit roster in the Western Conference. Let's do
yeah.
it.
Yeah, it is. We're pretty loaded. And I'd say even going in last year, pretty loaded. But this, I think, is another thing where we're going to see, like you were saying, Dave, we're going to see a little bit more with Naz Reid, I would think. And and that's something I'm really excited about. I still got my jersey, so we're ready to go.
Let's go to the stylesfinancial.com talking text line. John is on with us right now. John, good morning. How you feeling about this Timberwolves trade?
Is that me?
That's you, John.
Good. Oh, yeah. Hey, it's Mick.
Mick, sorry. Hi, Mick.
That's all right. Good to talk to you guys. I am John, but my friends call me Mick.
Okay, fair enough.
Yeah, that's right.
So, look, this is kind of the obvious, guys, but as everyone's said for the last couple of years, I think Cat getting a little long in the tooth. And he is a 10-year vet in the playoffs. He was kind of stumbling around in the lane doing rookie mistakes the last year or two. Big Cat fan. I'm just thinking Connolly did do a great job. It was a great trade. And I think Julius Randle and DiVincenzo, you know, what they did in the playoffs last year, they stepped up. I mean, they're really good players. As Pete just said, Woofies are loaded up for next year. So that's my two cents. I'll hang up. I just wanted to throw that in and
thank you, Mick.
Double down on Connolly doing a great job. Yep.
Yeah. Bye-bye. Thanks, Mick.
Thanks.
Appreciate
Mick.
The phone call. Yeah, I mean the thing is too that Julius Randle doesn't have to come in and light the floor on fire. He really doesn't. I mean, ultimately, Karl Anthony Towns, and I don't know if I actually thought he was pretty good in the playoffs when they needed him this year. He had some down games, but he also brought it in some games that he really needed to. But ultimately, with the moves that what happened, this is more about what everyone else did, I think, and less about what Karl Anthony Towns did. Mm-hmm. He became expendable, but not because of what he didn't do. But because more about what everyone else did, that Naz Reid played well, that everyone else, that you had Rudy Gobert in there who was phenomenal as well, that all these guys had kind of filled that, and comes to the decision of, well, do I really need this, or can I ship this off, get some more money, get another player back, so I can continue to build around more and even have that flexibility. And I that's what I, to me, Pete, that's my kind of underscored line. This is not about Karl Anthony Towns not getting it done here. It's more about other guys who also got it done for less money.
Yeah.
And that's what it is.
Which is always a concern in the NBA, and we know that. I mean, we look at these giant contracts, and sometimes they actually can hamstring you in a bad way. But I think Cat will be just fine. He's a New York guy anyway, right? So he's a guy who gets an opportunity to go back, play for the Knicks, and I'm sure his family would love that and think that's phenomenal. And so I don't think any harm there, no bad feelings. And meanwhile, we get a little bit more depth and that first-round pick. I don't know how this isn't something that looks pretty damn good on paper but also will be reflected on the court when the time comes, because these are good basketball players, and I think it's going to give us a different element this time when we get to the playoffs and when we get to that next level of the playoffs to maybe get to that, to the big dance, so to speak.
Yeah, I'm actually kind of curious about if New York is happy. I mean, yeah, they get Karl Anthony Towns, but that's a lot of salary to take on too, and it really hamstrings you. And that's a big thing too. Is it? This is going to hamstring the Knicks a little bit for a while. A Knicks team who I think is probably a little farther away from being major contenders in the East than the Wolves are in being contenders in the West. Mm-hmm. So, once again, Trader Tim gets it done. I really, as much as we talked about it ahead of time, thinking that, yes, this makes the most sense. Things can make sense and still not happen. Mm-hmm. The fact that he got it done was incredible, and it's a great trade. It's a great move for the Timberwolves. As much as we loved Karl Anthony Towns, there's a lot here. So a great trade for them. And I who knows? Maybe they're not done yet. We still got some time and $10 million more to spend. I would imagine and change there, that Trader Tim is ready to spend some more money as well. Now, yeah. If only we could figure out who the owner of the team was.
That's right.
That's next time. All right, let's take a break. It's Packer week. Did you know it? Packers Vikings, noon today. We'll talk about it with Matthew Collar next. Purple Insider Matthew Collar joining us now on the John Schuster Coldwell Banker Hotline. Matthew, good morning.
What's going on? How are you?
I'm great. We talked to your incredibly talented spouse earlier in the show. I did tell her she was my favorite one in your household, so I want to get that off my chest right away.
Well, she's also my favorite in our household as well. So you and I are very much on the
They agree.
Smart man. Packers and Actives just came out. Jair Alexander out today. Jordan Love is active. So you're there. I'm guessing Jordan Love's going to start. But how much of this does this change things now for the Vikings kind of strategy? Clearly, Jair was going to be on JJ, and now he's not there. That's going to change things, don't you think?
Yeah, I think that that came as a bit of a surprise, that we didn't know that he wasn't going to be able to play, and then that just sort of popped up on Friday. Maybe it's the Justin Jefferson flu, but probably not. But, you know, there was the stories that guys didn't want to bat against Randy Johnson back in the day, so they would come up with a hamstring or something. But no, that's not it. But you know what I do think is that this means that there has to be more attention now from the Packers on Justin Jefferson, because you can't just say, Jair, here's you, and then maybe a safety over the top. Now it has to be more of a complete team effort from the Packers. And if you're dedicating two or three guys on every play to Justin Jefferson, then I think there's going to be opportunities for other guys. And Jordan Addison coming back is huge. The fact that Addison didn't even have any type of designation, meaning he practiced in full on Friday, is a really big deal for this team, because the way that Jalen Naylor has taken these last couple of games and run with them, now there's confidence from Sam Darnold that he could throw to Jalen Naylor at any time. Brandon Powell has stepped up in a handful of big situations. And then, you know, we're talking about Jordan Addison coming back. This is a guy who was tremendous for them in week one, tremendous for them last year, and really good against the Packers last season. I feel like Sam Darnold comes into this game having to feel very confident, especially with the fact that the Packers' top corner is out.
Matt, how about the storyline and the backdrop of Aaron Jones and 7 years with the Packers? He wants to do a Lambeau leap today, and he looks great. He started out great. He's exactly what he has been with Green Bay. He's averaging over 5 yards a carry with one or two nice long runs, but he's a great grinder and does a great job. Between he and Ty Chandler, they really do play off of each other. Is that something that we'll see continue on with the running game?
Yeah, 100%. And I do think it's a huge storyline of how the interior of the offensive line can block for the Vikings, because this is a very complete defensive line. I think we've seen a couple D-lines this year that have good edge rushers, but I don't know if we've seen anyone with quite the top to bottom. They've got rotational players that come in. That's going to be a huge deal for the running game and getting that going with Jones. But as far as he goes, I mean, this is somebody that on both sides of this battle, everyone loves. I mean, everyone can shake hands over Aaron Jones, because the Packers organization, Matt LaFleur talked about how Jones is one of the favorite players that he has ever coached. And then I asked Kevin O'Connell about it, and he said that he echoes that same exact sentiment. Everyone who's around Aaron Jones is better for having been around Aaron Jones. And you see it in the way that he carries himself around the locker room and practice, all those things. But then, you know, he backs it up with the way that he plays. There's a lot of great guys in the world, but if you don't play at that level, it doesn't matter quite as much. But he can do everything. I mean, he breaks tackles. He's still got a burst to run away from somebody. He catches the ball. They got him, you know, chipping guys on the interior where he's having to throw a shoulder into a 320-pound man and knock him back. And he's willing to do all of that. He's completely reinvigorated their screen game, which was non-existent last year. He's helped in pass pro. I mean, I also think that he's a calming presence for Sam Darnold, that whenever he needs 5, 6, 7 yards, that he can always go to Aaron Jones. And what really blows my mind is that he never goes backwards. There's never negative runs when Aaron Jones is on the field, which is so impressive to me. So it I think would mean a ton to him. He was very surprised when he got cut by the Packers to be able to do the Lambeau leap. But I also think there's going to be a lot of fans in the stands who are even a little happy for him. I saw a lot of Aaron Jones jerseys as I was walking in the stadium today.
The Vikings and Packers kick off at noon today from Lambeau Field. Matt, Sam Darnold, it's three games. I get that. He's got eight touchdowns and two interceptions, by far his highest QBR of his career, again, over three games. But he is different. He just looks different than I've seen him play in the past. And as you see him and as you hear Kevin O'Connell and everyone else talk about him, is there a difference? Does anyone else sense a difference in the way he's playing and the way he's approaching this year? Because it's certainly – his play is – it's significantly better than we've ever seen, even through a three-game stretch.
Yeah, it's interesting because I asked probably, I don't know, 10 people that I knew that would have some connection to Sam Darnold during the offseason, and every person told me that they thought that he could do it under the right circumstances. Every person I heard from people – in Carolina that said, we actually really liked him. We thought it wasn't his fault. And so I thought, okay, well, you know what? Then maybe there's a chance here. And I think the way that he's worked with Kevin O'Connell, the biggest thing is just confidence. I mean, when you see Darnold taking a three-step drop, hit the back foot, and the ball comes out, like that's something that Kevin O'Connell emphasizes so much, but you also have to believe in it, right? Like you have to believe in the concepts. You have to believe in the receivers. You have to believe in the protection to play with that type of confidence. And so far, they have not let him down when it comes to those things. It's also helped that they've been ahead in every game, so he's never had to try to play hero. And if he made a mistake like he did against San Francisco, the defense has been able to bail him out. So really it kind of takes a village to, you know, get a Sam Darnold to play this well. But I mean, that applies for what, 95% of quarterbacks in the league. And then, you know, there's those moments for me with the arm talent where you just go, okay, I mean, this is special. This is something that, you know, that the 97 yard throw when he looks like he just slings it casually 50 yards in the air, or the throw for a touchdown to Jalen Naylor in the tight window last week, you know, you combine sort of a game manager mindset with the occasional greatness, and you've got what you've got so far. But, of course, as you said, three games, I mean, we can't make any declarations yet. We're going to have to see it consistently, and I think this is a really big test today.
Now, I think that there's one thing that the Vikings haven't faced yet that might make this game a little bit more interesting in terms of for the Packers, and that's Josh Jacobs at running back. First of all, he's big, he's fast, he's an Alabama kid, as all of them are seem to be great, but was with the Raiders, now he's with the Packers, he's who's filling in for Aaron. So I look at him, and he's getting 4.5 yards a carry. He's big, strong, thick guy. Now, we haven't seen anything like that yet, so I'm curious to see what that looks like against the Viking defense, where we've got on our side of the ball, probably thinner than most defenses in the middle. So I'd be curious, what do you think about that?
No, it's a great point. I think that this run offense is on a completely different level from what we've seen previously. And San Francisco would have been the team that would have been similar, but they didn't have McCaffrey, and they turned the ball over a few times and got behind in the game, and they couldn't really dominate with the run, but they still averaged 5 yards a carry with Jordan Mason and gained 100 yards with him, which did maybe raise an eyebrow for a game like this. And what we've seen with the Packers and their adjustments to Malik Willis, and I know it's going to be Jordan Love today, but you can also take some of the things they've been so successful in the run game and transfer them over to doing them with Jordan Love. And I think it speaks to coaching. And I always have a great respect when a coach loves a run game, because they know what that can do for the passing game and for the confidence of your team and for the energy of the game. If you're just running over and over again on the other team, there's something to that. Like, I don't know if it's a momentum or it's just a imposing your will football thing, but it feels like you've got complete command of the game. And that's how these last two games have gone for Green Bay, because they were running so successfully. And we haven't seen that the defense for the Vikings tested. They have 5 sacks a game, in part because I mean, they've been playing in situations where you can just dial up anything you want, any blitz you want, any rush you want. And will they be able to do that if Josh Jacobs is running successfully? I think it becomes a lot harder at that point. So if we were doing the keys to the game, Pete, I think that would be maybe the top one for me.
I'm with you.
Matthew Collar from Purple Insider joining us on the John Schuster Coldwell Banker Hotline. Matthew, how much of this game comes down to what the defenses can do, or if the defenses can continue the play that they've had? Packers had 8 sacks last week. Everyone's talking about Flores' defense. How much does this game hinge on which defense actually holds up their consistent play better?
Yeah, you know, because I think it's going to be a knockdown drag out, you know, it'll probably end up being 43-38 or something. But I tend to agree with you. I do, because, you know, both of these defenses have so much talent up front and such a great ability to get after the passer. And the question comes down to, with two quarterbacks that have great talent but also are capable of making big mistakes, which one of them is going to make the big mistake? Because I think both coaches are going to come in with the same mentality of trying to control the ball, trying to set up a big play action to maybe hit a deep shot at some point, but which team, you know, turns the ball over? Which team has a strip sack? I mean, I think that a lot comes down to that. And I'm just very curious, you know, the Vikings had to prepare for two different quarterbacks, so how much were they able to do with Jordan Love? I mean, I imagine they put the work in, but, you know, there's only so many hours in the day. So is there going to be something out there that they didn't expect from the Packers today that they end up seeing? Or are we going to see both quarterbacks at times? And then, you know, that adds a whole new wrinkle to it. So it's, yeah, it is. I mean, what a tremendous matchup, right? I mean, these two teams both feel like they can compete for the NFC North, and this game could end up being a determining factor when we get to the end of the season.
And Matt, I will say one last thing about the quarterbacks. You brought it up, but I look at Malik Willis. Now, they gave up on him, obviously, at Tennessee. But, wow, these last two games, the kid has done an amazing job. I mean, absolutely an amazing job. 73% completions, and when he runs the ball and tucks it and keeps it, he's averaging almost 10 yards a carry. So he does bring something a little bit different than what we've been seeing, where Jordan Love is far more of a pocket quarterback. And I think in some ways it might be scarier for the Vikings to go up against Willis at times.
Yeah, I think that especially if they start to mix him in, maybe like what the Saints used to do with Taysom Hill, when every once in a while he would come in and then throw a 50-yard bomb against the Vikings, which he did a couple times. You know, I think with Malik Willis, one, it sort of shows you which organizations know what they're doing and which don't, that Tennessee sent him packing for no reason. But, you know, I think it also speaks to how good Matt LaFleur is at his job. And I think the best coaches are able to understand the skill sets of their players and work around those. And what I noticed from Willis is that he did hit a couple of downfield passes, but a lot of it was the underneath stuff where the ball was coming out of his hands quick, and then he is a spectacular runner. So they really just adapted their offense to what Malik Willis could do best, and also what he was capable of doing after only being here for a couple of weeks, which makes it even more remarkable what he was able to do. So yeah, I think that when you're going up against the Packers, you're also going up against, I think, one of the best overall coaches in the NFL, and I would not be surprised to see a little Willis today, for sure. Mm-hmm.
Matthew Coller, always a pleasure, buddy. Enjoy Green Bay.
Thanks, Matthew.
All right, thanks for having me, guys.
Matthew Coller, joining us on the John Schuster Coldwell Banker Hotline. We'll take a quick break, and we will come back and talk Twins meltdown once again. Is it a worst in history? But more importantly, as we always have to do, someone has to take the blame. We'll talk about who that is coming up next. It is the end. Your Minnesota Twins finish up their season today against the Baltimore Orioles. But let's be honest, they finished up the season about a week
August.
Or two ago. I mean, the last week of this is just terrible.
It was over in October last year.
It was over in October last year, yeah. So there's two things, and we've talked quite a bit about, is there blame to be passed around? 100% there's blame to be passed around. We're getting some text-ins here to the stylesfinancial.com talk and text line. If the Twins were as good as baseball as they are at marketing, we would be in the series every year. Bring back Paul Molitor. Who cares if he doesn't play to the media? I will disagree. Actually, Molitor was phenomenal with the media. Super nice guy. New merchandise, $20 hot dogs, $30 parking, and they still haven't figured out how to stream their broadcast. Okay.
A lot of critics out there, huh?
Yeah. Can we use the money saved on Carl Anthony Towns for Twins pitching? That deserves a round of applause. I'm reading this one as I go here, so bear with me.
Uh-oh.
Being sarcastic, like Chris Carter says, you need a fall guy. I blame the athletic trainer. No, seriously, it's on the pole, lads. When your season on the line, a worst meltdown this team has ever had, and I'm not sure this will wake the pole lads up to changing their frugal ways. It's tough to be a fan of a team with Cody Funderburk is pitching in key spots. Tells you all you need to know about ownership. I don't disagree with all that. There's two things that there's two or three things that really bug me here, and I'll go back to them. One, we've talked about this. Nothing was done at the deadline. Okay, and that's on ownership. That's on general managers. That at the deadline they said, nope, the guys we need are here in the locker room, in the clubhouse, and that's what's going to change things. The problem is when you do that, and those guys aren't in the clubhouse, it's a huge mess. There's another two other things that I think when you really look at this slide, where did it turn? Do you remember it was about three or four? It was probably about 3.5 weeks ago now. Bailey Ober goes into the seventh inning and he's pitching strong. And because the analytics, remember this?
Yep.
The analytics, they pull him and he ends up losing the game. They end up losing the game on the bullpen. That's a big point to me because it seems like from that point on, they were probably already starting to go in the tank, but it continued. Then, at the end of August, Rocco Baldelli comes out and calls his team unprofessional. And we said this at the time. This either works brilliantly or it fails miserably. And I would say it's probably about 80-20 where it almost always fails.
Mm-hmm.
And then 20% of the time, maybe your team wakes up. Both of those decisions, in my mind, are on the manager. So when I say there's blame to be spread around here, truly there's blame to be spread around here with this team. This is not on one person at all, in my mind.
No, absolutely not. And I think that, you know, we went into that trade deadline thinking, you know, we've played good baseball, not great. We were still in the predicament of being a little bit above 500, but depending on who we were playing and what their status was, we did struggle against the teams with winning records. That there's no doubt about it. But that's why it was time to make a move. We had the bats. We were doing things on that side of the plate very nicely. But when it comes to the pitching, we had some holes, and we needed to fill those holes. And we did absolutely nothing to do that. And I still stand by that. I do think you're right. At the end of August, just take a look at – you talk about your team as unprofessional or your maybe the organization – wow, that was August, and how did we perform in September, right? I think the last thing I'd say is the injury bug certainly is something that is a factor. I don't know that the rest of Major League Baseball had quite the injuries that we did of star players that were very meaningful. Even the guys, you know, that were really carrying us with their bats, that was part of the problem because we weakened a little bit there. We stayed about the same with pitching, maybe got a little worse, but stayed about the same. And we lost some bats. And because of that, because of injury and everything else, we just weren't fielding the team that was going to get us to the next level. Even if we would have gotten to the playoffs, Dave, is that enough? Is that what our whole goal is just to get there and then get beat? Mm-hmm. I feel like that's where we are. We weren't looking forward enough to say, we need more pitching. If we can get and figure out a way to get a couple of another arms, two guys, maybe three, that would be great. But we didn't even do that. So we had almost no chance. And obviously September, it speaks for itself.
AJ Pierzynski, our good friend, probably not a fan of, and most people in Minnesota, not a fan of them, of him. It's told Sports Illustrated, quote, "This is one of the biggest choke jobs of all time." And you can put it on the players, you can put it on the owners, you can put it on Rocco Baldelli. Pierzynski said on the show, "Foul territory. It's an organizational failure. I'm sorry, there's no other way to say it. They didn't sign anybody in the offseason. They didn't go trade for anybody at the deadline. They thought they could do it. What they did last year and cruise in. The Guardians didn't go away and the Royals didn't go away. The Tigers came out of nowhere, like literally nowhere." Listen, I don't like AJ Pierzynski. I never liked him as a player. I'm not a big fan of him after that. But he's not wrong. He's 100% right. Because then they also, you know, and then there was the switch from Royce Lewis moving him to another position. Granted, it's still infield, but that's an odd switch as well. There's just so much wrong with what happened here. And on the StylesFinancial.com talk and text line, someone's saying we need a new batting coach and new pitching coach. You can't keep doing this every year. I mean, how many batting coaches and pitching coaches have we been through in the past 5 to 7 years, and it's always the same problem? This is not a coaching thing.
Right.
If you don't know how to hit in the clutch at this point in your career, why are you a major league ball player? If you can't figure out where to put a pitch, Why are you a major league pitcher? This is not on pitching. Baseball is one of those sports where you just need to play the game. This isn't like football. There's play calling. It's different. These guys know how to hit. They know how to pitch. If you don't know how to do it by now, what in the world's wrong with you? Josh, your hand is raised. Go ahead.
Jeez. Tell us how you really feel. Wow.
That's a good rant.
Here's the thing, done. And you mentioned Royce Lewis, and I've heard Chris talk about it on the broadcast on our airwaves as well. It's a bit concerning to me that regardless of injury and whatnot, that a 25-year-old like Royce Lewis feels very overworked and stimulated from this season. If you're 25 and you're feeling fatigue at the end of a baseball season, that's a little alarming to me at that age because of how just good of an athlete the kid is in general. If that is the situation with your body at this point of the season, man, I know it's a long year, but if you're 25 and you're keeping yourself as well conditioned as these baseball players do, that's a little concerning to me.
Except the fact that his body is echoing those same statements.
Yeah.
I agree with you. You should be able to hack this at this point. But, like, you know, he did all these changes in his workout regimen in the offseason, all that, and then, the first week of the season, his quad muscle goes, right? I don't disagree with you. Let's see, more text here really quick before we go to break. Rocco doesn't have a feel for the game of baseball. He's all analytics. He has no clue about small ball.
He's moved away from the analytics thing somewhat. There has been a few instances where he's gone to the analytics portion of the game, and I get it. And let me tell you, people that are chiming in on that, he's not the only baseball manager in Major League Baseball that's doing that. So it's not just a Rocco thing. It's a manager thing that is just part of the current era that we're in when it comes to baseball. But Rocco played it. I grew up, like many, watching Rocco come to the Metrodome when he was with the Rays. He's played the game at the biggest level you can play. He knows baseball. Let's not mistake his experience as a player.
Doesn't always mean you're a good coach though.
Yeah.
It's hot. Wayne Gretzky, best hockey player of all time, was not a good coach.
Yeah, yep. It's true.
It's one of those things.
But
we've
also learned nothing could save that Arizona organization. Obviously,
that is true.
Yeah,
but it can be difficult for a great player to say, do it like I did it, but because it can't be done.
It's a different game now. Yep.
And Rocco's not the greatest. You know, he's not the greatest player of all times, but This is a major bummer. I'm really interested to see. By the way, the Twins do play today, final game of the season. I'm assuming tickets are still available if you want some.
Yeah, but they're in my windshield. Hopefully, my windshield didn't get broken into.
You don't have to worry.
I don't think so. Or you do. Or you're happy that someone came and took them for you. They probably left you a $5 bill on the dashboard. All right, let's take a quick break. Come back. The latest in the NIL saga that we have talked about, Pete Najarian's fears have come true. We're going to talk about that coming up next. Matthew Sluka is his name, UNLV's starting quarterback. He quit the team this week, citing verbal promises of NIL money. His agent, Marcus Cromartie, I have no idea if that's of the Cromarties. Sluka, who is a graduate transfer from Holy Cross, was promised by an unnamed assistant coach that he'd receive between $100,000 and $150,000 in NIL funds. His father, Bob, told ESPN that his son's only gotten a $3,000 relocation fee. UNLV Athletic Department released a statement that said, Sluka's personal representation made financial demands to the department, and that the collective, in order to keep paying, the department said it considered that a pay-for-play situation and would violate NCAA rules. UNLV does not engage in such activity, nor does it respond to implied threats. Pete, this is a very, very fine line and slippery slope, right? You can't. I didn't even know that the NCAA had a pay-for-play situation rule anymore.
Yeah.
That's still a thing?
Dave, they are changing things before we even can keep track of what's going on. I would say this, though.
Everything's pay for play.
And this whole thing with NIL, this is one of the big concerns that I had. How do you guarantee it? How do you, if Ohio State can have a $10 million in their NIL and we have $3 million, it seems like there's a big advantage, right, to Ohio State versus Minnesota, just as an example. But all of that aside, how about the fact of a guy who has had a great career, he's done this and that, he wants to get back to the alumni, he says, sure, I'm going to donate to the NIL because I want my team to be great. And he says, I'll give you $10 million over the next 3 years. But he suddenly has a bad financial run. He pulls away, and now all of a sudden you're not going to be able to pay these guys with the NIL. Is there really something that's concrete about this whole thing? And I don't even know the answer to that, but I can tell you this. I wondered when this day would come where somebody's not getting paid. And this quarterback was not getting paid. He was playing pretty well. He had 6 touchdowns, 1 interception. And he says, you know what? I'm not getting paid. I'm out of here. And he can't play the rest of this year anywhere else, but he can next year. So he extends out his ability to continue to play. But it's really interesting, Dave. And this is a ranked team that was 3-0. And by the way, they're now 4-0. And his backup came in and was outstanding and threw 3 touchdowns yesterday. And they beat the tar out of Fresno State. So they're now 4-0 and they're moving up the ranks. It's going to be a really, really interesting discussion with NIL into the future.
Oh, boy. It's going to keep going. It never ends. I honestly, like, pay for play, I did not even know that that was a – how do you enforce that in the day of NIL? But we don't have enough time. Gentlemen, thank you very much. It was a blast. Let's do it again next Sunday, okay?
Always good. Always good. Take care, guys.
All right. See you, guys.